How is the journey? It's long, isn't it? The journey's been a very long journey, hasn't it? And I got to run through these chapters quick and fast, right? But I have not been doing so. And the reason is because next week we are going to talk about the mountain. And I'm going to talk about two other things that are involved with the Feast of Shavuot. And it has to begin at the mountain first. It doesn't begin in the mountain first. The second phase cannot be instituted. The final phase cannot be completed. It's just 1, 2, 3 event. So, we are going to be in the 19th chapter, but I'm going to highlight the 18th chapter just briefly for right now, because the 18th chapter is out of sequence. And it's out of sequence for reason. The story here of Jethro coming is well after the time of the Ten Commandments and well after the time Moses went up to the mountain for 40 days and repeated the sequence again for another 40 days. So we're way late in the evening of the year, and it's very important that when we reached past the 40th time in the mountain, I'll go a whole lot faster than going up there for us, that you will have an idea of when this one was instituted, or that's when Jethro, his father-in-law, came. The reason why it's instituted here, because this is the very beginning that where Moses was trying to instruct and teach the people about the law. Well, he couldn't very well do that if he didn't have it. And he spent 40 days on the mountain the first time, and he met and talked long, and God taught him a tremendous amount of the things that are important. And then, of course, we know we talk about the calf. We'll get there when that time happens. Then he came down, and then he had to go back up again. And another 40 days. And then he came back down the mountain after that second period of 40 days. And then we will see where Jethro fits into the picture. All right? The reason why you could pretty well tell this, and you don't have to go there, just make notes on it. In Exodus 18th chapter, 15th verse, he said this to his father-in-law, "But the people come unto me to require of Elohim." Now, maybe they didn't require of Elohim before, were they? I'll explain to you. Some of you were here last week and some of you were not. So we're going to backtrack just a little bit, but not right now. We'll backtrack a little bit to have a picture of why this took place. They were not out following and wanting and desiring anything from God. They were seeing something different. And I'll backtrack on the 17th chapter when that point comes around. So even the verse 20 there of Exodus 18, 20. "And thou shalt teach them the ordinance and the laws that shall show them the way wherein they must walk and work that they do." That's when he started giving more people, getting the elders involved within the very teaching of the very things that Moses would have had to teach those elders what to do. All right. Before I have someone reading the 19th chapter, I would like to have, how many would like to have the outline? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, I got about 12 copies so far made up. So that's quite a bit for right now. And you'll receive this afterwards. I'm not going to put it on the internet. Okay. The reason is because this always has to be updated. I'm not about to. I've worked on this thing for years and years. Oh, I got this information. I got this. So I'll be adding and subtracting and taking away. That was more important. But no, it's something for you to take home and just look at and go through some. I got some minor scriptures that you can look at. But look before and after and between and find out. Many of you have learned from me what I say when I start explaining words. And the Bible is full of words that are very, very important to be understood. And so I just wanted to tell you that. We will have it ready for, I'll have it by next week. And I have not made a mind out if I'm going to give it to you before I talk or after I talk. I'll probably give it to you before I talk, because you probably will not. You'll be busy eating and dancing and doing all that kind of stuff that we do on a holiday. Okay, a reader, the 19th chapter of Exodus.
In the third month, after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. For they had departed from Rephidim, had come to the wilderness of Sinai, and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded him. Then all the people answered together and said, All that the Lord has spoken, we will do. So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. So Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. Then the Lord said to Moses, Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day the Lord will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. You shall set bonds for the people all around, saying, Take heed to yourselves that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. Not a hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot with an arrow. Whether man or beast, he shall not live. When the trumpet song sounds long, they shall come near the mountain. So Moses went down from the mountain to the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said to the people, Be ready for the third day. Do not come near your wives. Then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain. And the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. So Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by voice. Then the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. And the Lord said to Moses, Go down and warn the people, lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish. Also let the priests who come near the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. But Moses said to the Lord, The people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you warned us, saying, Set bounds around the mountain and consecrate it. Then the Lord said to him, Away, get down, and then come up, you and Aaron with you. But do not let the priest and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and spoke to them.
Any comments?
I just have a question about the priests, since we don't have the law yet. And
we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Anything kind of stand out that was different or maybe interesting?
My initial understanding of that years ago, when they were not to go and touch the mountain or anything, I thought it was God himself who was killing them, but he was putting it onto the people that they were to stone or to shoot them through with an arrow.
Yep. Yep, that's true. Pat?
I would like to know the shofar that was so loud that it blasted so loud they could hear it from the camp and caused them to tremble.
We have no statement?
Can we study the cherubim or not yet?
I'm sorry, what?
Can we study the cherubim or not yet?
No, not yet. All right. Before we begin this chapter, I'm going to ask some of you who were there last week, what was going on in the 17th chapter of Exodus? Do you remember what I talked about? Remember what I said? Sorry, what?
Amalek and the rock.
Amalek and the rock. It's the rock and then the Amalek. Right. What was the big issue at first?
No water.
Okay, so I told you that God has set in motion and he wants to take them to a certain place. And God took them to a place where they ran out of water and there was no way you can get water. And what happened? What did the elders of Israel do? They were going to kill Moses. You remember that? They're going to kill Moses. And Moses cried out to God and says, what am I going to do? What did God say? You remember? Turn back to Exodus 17th chapter, verse 6. And it says here, very plain in Old English, I'm going to read it. Verse 6, now God is saying something to Moses. He says, behold, I will stand before thee upon the rock at Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come forth out of it that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Because why? God said to Moses, you take those guys who are going to kill you, and you take them with you, and you hit that rock. Oh, he didn't say, oh, he had to hit it. Now, put yourself in the shoes of the elders at this particular point in time. You were wanting to kill this guy. Everybody's going to die of thirst. And you're going to stone him, you're going to kill him, because he led you in a place of death. Right? Now along comes, he says, I want you to hit that rock. Pambo. If you were there, wanting to kill Moses, and you see him with this stick, hit the rock so hard that it split the rock, not the stick. And all of a sudden water came out. You probably would run for your life. Wow. You want to kill this guy? He just beat the stone. Stones, we can't stone this guy. That stick of his is wicked. No, I don't. That was the thinking, but you got to pick the point. But we're looking here, and he says he did it in the sight of those elders. You remember that? What was the next incident that took place? It's a war. God put them and sent them into a war. Oh, you people think
Now, this is almost what God is thinking here. God sent the army. The army didn't come and God said, what's this? Oh, what's going on? No, he sent the army. And Moses told Joshua, get ready for fighting. Tomorrow you will fight them. Right? What happened? Okay. Now, what does the word mean? I told you when we went to the Song of Solomon's, and we have this description of a chariot. And in English, they got it that first the chariot is made up of wood, but its pillars made up of silver. And in Yomiya translations, and its base was made of gold. No, it wasn't. The base is made of wood. In Hebrew, that word does not mean base. It means a banister, a railing. So you have this chariot, and there are posts holding up a railing. That railing, in Hebrew, is rafadah. Rafidah. It's a feminine word and it's singular. Here is plural. Now, who was holding up what? Aha. Cooter and Aaron were the post holding up the railing. And his hands were steady. That's what the name means. It wasn't a place that they had on a map. It's what happened there. Right? You remember that? So, let's go on now into the 19th chapter. Excuse me. Very interesting chapter, isn't it? 19th chapter. By the way, Exodus chapter 1, the first verse of chapter 19. Some of your translations really mess it up because that's not said in Hebrew. This is the third month when the children of Israel are gone forth from the land of Egypt in the same day. That word not in Hebrew. They came up, went forth out of the land of Israel. Should say, in this day they came unto the wilderness of Sinai. Should say, in this day, not the same day. In this day, they came. Now, we're talking about a particular day. All right? We're talking about a particular day. We'll get there in a minute. Have we lost anybody so far? Now, Elohim, Moses went up to Elohim, and Yahweh called him out of the mountain, saying, thus you shall speak to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel. Oh, now there's two things that has to go on here. I'll explain that a little bit later on down in the future. But you remember there's one called the house of Israel, and then one called the house of Jacob. And then there's one that says the children of Israel, or the sons of Israel. Okay? But drop down now to verse 4. Ye, now he's talking to Moses. Okay? This is what you're going to say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel. So now Moses is going to say, ye, plurality, all of them, have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bear you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. The phrase eagle's wings is interesting terminology. The word eagle, see, it's just think what you think what eagle is. It's a very big bird. There's two key characteristics of an eagle. It's extremely fast and it soars high. And the prey has no idea because the eagle can be out of that thing's sight Because the eagle's got very keen eyesight. And shoom, when it attacks, it comes with full swiftness. So every time it talks about this, he didn't carry him on wings. I mean, he came like an eagle, quick, fast, and sudden to the Egyptians. It was quick, fast, and sudden. They didn't know it was coming. Right? So we talk about that. In the other places, there are times when the Word of God has where a person or a king or a nation soars like an eagle, and he says, I'm going to cut you down. Eagle can be negative or positive. Depends upon if God addresses himself that way or people are considered that they are that way. Yes?
But it says in verse 4, I bear you on eagle's wings.
Right.
Not the Egyptians were bore on the eagle's wings or the Israelites.
Moses has to tell to the house of Jacob and to the children of Israel that he is the one that did this all. He handled it. He carried it. Bore does not mean that's a burden. I'm responsible for it all. All right? So he took them, and he's doing the whole job. At this point in time, they're going to find out how terrorizing God is. The first time in their life. Now, when we look at this, remember that striking that rock could have caused those elders to keep their mouth shut. They were at the point of being afraid of Moses at this point in time. They didn't fear him before. But now, man, look out. They've got a wicked... What's the police officer's carry? A platoon, yeah. He's got a wicked one. It breaks rocks apart. All right, so we go on down. It says now that in the verse 5, it's not a good translation, but I'm going to read it here. Now, therefore, if ye will obey, Moses is to tell the house of Israel and the house of Jacob, children of Israel and the house of Jacob, to if you will obey my name, quoting the Messiah or quoting God, indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure to me, or unto me, above all people of all the earth. Another translation says, if you really hearken unto my voice, because this the word is Shema there. The word obey is the word Shema, and it's listed twice. Once in a singular firm form, and immediately thereafter, and a you obey, ye obey. Ye hear, ye Shema. So he's telling them what you want to do. Now, he's put a condition there, by the word. If it's really there in the Hebrew language. There's a condition, however. How are you going to become a peculiar person? How have they become a peculiar person? They have to do what? Just two things. They are to hearken unto what I am saying, number one. And the second one is to keep. Now, keep means to preserve. Hold on to. Hang it. Keep it within. Don't let go of it. Don't lose it. It's yours. The covenant is yours. Don't let go of it. Keep it. Preserve it. Like you would do a sheep or a kid goat, small sheep, small goat. You got to keep, you got to protect it. You got to hang it. It's yours. Hang on to it. And if you do that, guess what's going to happen? Not only will you be a peculiar people, this is how you're going to be very peculiar. Or that's not weird. Doesn't mean strange. It means this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to elevate you. You shall be a kingdom of priest, Cohen's. There's the one now we have the word priest. And a holy nation. Now he says, now these are the words which thou, Moses, shall speak unto the children of Israel. He says, you will be a kingdom of priests
and you will be a holy nation unto me if you do two things. Hearken, Shema, listen, pay attention, and keep. Wow. That's all? Yeah, that's all. Such a deal, right? And guess what they said? Now remember, he went back to those elders. Verse 9. And Moses came down, or came and called for the elders of the people, the leadership, and laid before them the facts of what the words of Yahuwah had just stated. And they said, oh, okay, yes.
That'd be kind of like in this part where you said they were holding his arms up, and he said, if you'll just look.
Did you look?
At what he was doing.
Oh,
they'd
yeah.
live. And like what you're saying here, if they'll listen.
They'll listen.
Hearken. And do.
And the old English word 1611, I love the old English word 1611 when it's defined as 1611 English. Obedience. It means hearken unto and respond. That's all it really means. Remember the damsel knocked on the door and she obeyed the door? No. What did she do? She heard somebody knocking on that door, and so she obeyed, hearkened unto, and responded to what was at the door. Who was at the door? Remember? Who was at the door? Peter. Yeah. You know what? Someday, your God is going to knock on your door. I hope you all obey it. If you don't, he can't come in. Yeah, I throw that in there. That's not part of what I'm talking about today. But I'm addressing the elders and the elders and the elders. We're talking leadership. I said many times before, it's the leadership that must be held accountable. What Apostle John said, don't be many teachers, my brethren, for you'll receive the greater condemnation, the greater judgment. You will be more punished than the rest. It's a difficult way to be. But see, God does make choices. Moses didn't want to be one, but he had to be one anyway. And then the people said, the people, the elders, basically, answered and said to them all together, yeah, we'll do it. Sounds great, right? Now we're at this place. What's the name of the place that we're at? Verse 1, it said, this day they came unto the wilderness of Sinai, or Sinai. So they're at this place called Sinai. Not Sinai, Sinai. I don't want to answer for you. You keep quiet. What does the word in Hebrew mean? Thorny. Okay, thorny. Very important to understand thornies. Now, you know if you were a shepherd and you had your sheep and they're out there in the field and guess what? You can't bring them in because it's too late. What do? You put thorns around them. That nothing can come in to do damage to the sheep. The Ten Commandments are the thorns that are around about you. They are to preserve you. They're to keep you. But what does he say? You must keep them. You must preserve them. You must make sure the thorns are always around you. I'm telling you what they are, and then you put them into your world, into your life, into your existence. And nothing will hurt you. Nothing will come to you. We'll get to this point. You have a question, Bill?
I've been pruning our blackberries. That's not an easy task. Dealing with the thorns, trying to, you know, it's just, it kind of gives me an insight as to
that's
protecting
right.
the animal. That's a lot of hard work to protect the animals. I mean, we're not talking one or two sheep probably either.
Right, no. The whole family, I mean, you as an individual have to keep them around you and your family and your community and your, you know, don't walk in with a group of people without some thorns around about you. They protect you. So it's a thorny mountain. Now, oh, that's the thorny mountain. Powerful things came down. Very powerful things. We'll go into detail that next week. But I want to drop down to verse 19. Verse 9. Now, here we have the elders are still with Moses. They're not far away. And Yahweh said unto Moses, lo, I come down, or I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people, those leaders that were going to stone you a few days ago, and now are terrified, that they may hear when I speak unto you, and believe ye forever. So they were in earshot, weren't they? Now, I don't remember the great Ten Commandments ever saying that. I don't remember the great Ten Commandments ever showing the elders going to kill Moses, and then he struck the rock, and them getting terrified. You see, the impact would be greater if it was really portrayed that on the TV screen or a movie screen. We'd see the power and the awesomeness of God rather than Hollywood. All right. So it says, this is why they actually heard what was going on. No yelling, no screaming, no shouting, no deep voice, no fire, no thunder. What was around? What came down? A thick cloud, and a very dark, thick cloud. I'm going to throw an awful lot of people curve here. You know, we have this song we sing, and we have the vision that we're all going to be caught up in the cloud. And we think it's a nice, whitey, pretty, white. No. God is always in this very dark one. Everywhere He is at, where people begin to recognize that He is God, He's always in a dark, thick cloud. And so when you think of Him coming in pretty white clouds, there's nothing in the Bible that says pretty white clouds. He's going to come, all right. And that cloud's going to be very, very thick. And it's going to be very, very heavy. That's why I don't think. That's why I think people will actually see His coming. Not this marvelous thing with halo around Him, but wear white. They're going to see that thick, dark, black cloud. And they're going to be afraid. They have to be. That's what God did here to all the house of Israel. Did He not? Did He come down a nice white cloud? No, He came down and He landed on the mountain. And what happened when He landed there? Woo! Bad things to gain place. Yes?
Question would be that if the Lord had come down in a white cloud with His glory shining through, basically Israel would be toast. The difference, I think, might be, in especially in some things that you see in the book of Revelation, is that that is a part of the coming, is that the glory of the Lord comes through, and you know there are some references there about you know the wicked being destroyed at the brightness of His coming. So basically, that is part of the coming, is that the glory of the Lord is going to do destruction.
Now, we'll see that when we go to the mountain the second time. You'll see what the glory really is all about. He still was in this dark cloud.
light comes into the darkness, and the darkness could not comprehend it and understand it. I come to you in a thick cloud, the people will hear. Verse 10, and Yahuwah said to Moses, go unto the people, the ones right next to you, you know, they're in earshot, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready against the third day. For the third day, Yahuwah will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. All right. Oh, it went dead, didn't it? This thing called this day, they were in the wilderness of Sinai. Something took place on this day. What took place on this day? When we just got to reading? What took place on this day? God said to Moses, come up here, I'm going to talk with you. And I want you to tell these people something. I want you to tell them that they hearken unto my words and hear my covenant, they do my covenant, they will be special people. This day. Though this day. In Hebrew it calls the this day. Now. He said now, in 3 days, on the third day, I want you to go back, tell them to clean themselves today and tomorrow, and the third day, I'm coming. Oh, backtrack. I'll explain the sixth day in a minute. But day one, day two, day... Oh, it was the fourth. Fourth day of the third month. It says they were in the third month. In the third month. We are just getting through today, or we're going to be doing today what's called what? After I'm finished, we'll do what? The new moon. Technically speaking, I think the moon will be seen this evening with the first of the month. 6 days later, 6, 7, 8, 9, and you'll come. Now let's put it this way. I got to backtrack. I'm sorry. Technically, today is the 29th day. I covered that last week because I needed to get into this one to lead us in. And from this place, the water, now, this is the first day of the week, right? And there is the first day, which is now the first. Yep. So, the new moon actually began on sunset. Right? On the 30th. At the beginning of the day, next day, where is that 30th? So, this is day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We are in exact cycle. Next week, we'll be on the sixth day of the third month. Now, in the Jewish world, why do you think they generally keep the sixth of the third month as Shavuot? Why? Because it really truly did land on the sixth day of the third month. All of the rabbis who were very scholarly know that. And they also know they're waiting for the Sanhedrin to correct it. It's not the sixth day of the month. It's what happened on what's called this day and 3 days later.
So, with that in mind, we're on this day, and so we're moving now rapidly. Be ready against the third day, for the third day Yahuwah will come down in the sight of the people upon Mount Sinai, Mount Thorny. And thou shalt set bounds around the people and above about, and saying, take heed to yourself that you do not go up to the mountain or touch it. Yes.
Richard, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I would like you, before we go on with the next step, clear up something in my mind. You just said that the rabbis knew that it really was the sixth day of the third month that Moses went up.
God came down.
The God came down. Moses went up and God came down.
No, God came down, then Moses went up. We'll talk about that later.
All right. Okay. No, okay, but that's not the issue. The issue is what are the Sanhedrin, what are the rabbis waiting the Sanhedrin to correct?
I'm not there. I do not know.
Well, maybe. How do you know there's something to correct?
They know. The first thing that's supposed to be on their docket was a calendar. And they're bickering over it like crazy.
You mean in terms of what
the moon.
Day?
Counting the moon.
Oh, I got you.
When the new crescent of the moon begins, that's the first day.
Right.
Now, we know the Jewish, once in a while it lands on the right one. Most of the time it doesn't. It's always off a day or two. But they had to do with what's called what? Why did they make that decision?
Well, the Bikurim.
The what?
It was the offering of the Bikurim, the first fruits. There's been that discussion.
It's the dispersia. Because of the dispersia, they moved it to make sure. And most holy days, a lot of Jews keep two holy days. They keep it on 2 days
right.
to make sure they get which one. All right.
Okay.
The same thing when it comes to the new moon.
Okay.
They'll do it for 2 days. Well, that's understandable because it's the dispersia.
Right.
And so they had to make a decision. I'm not against the decision they made.
Right.
But now they're in Israel. And so they have to make a decision. If we make the decision, is it going to affect the dispersia? Yes. Well, what do we do about it? Okay. That's all. That's all. Let's continue on now. Okay. When the trumpet sounds, verse 13, latter parts, when the trumpet sounds long, they shall come up to the mountain or come up to the area of the mountain. They can't go up into the mountain. Okay? And Moses went down from the mountain unto the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said to the people, be ready against the third day. Come not at your wives. Verse 16, and it came to pass on the third day, when? In the morning, that there was a thunders and lightning and thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceedingly loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with Elohim. And they stood at the base of the mountain. And the mountain was, and Mount Sinai was altogether a smoke. And Yahuwah descended upon it in pretty hot person, wouldn't you think? It was still dark. Still dark cloud. In the book of Deuteronomy, it says, you didn't see him. All you saw was a dark cloud. It smoked like it was in a furnace. And the whole place quaked. And the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder. And Moses spoke, and Elohim answered him in a voice. And
And Yahuwah came down upon the mountain. Very interesting. On the top of the mount. And Yahuwah called Moses up to the top of the mount. And Moses went up. All the other times we hear him saying he went up to the mountain. Here now, he's going to the very tippy top, the head of it, the very top portion of it. When you climb a mountain, you don't necessarily have to go to its peak. You go up the mountain, and then God talked with Moses and the elders, and sometimes Aaron. But this time he came and just at the very top of it, and then Moses is the first one that showed up, comes up to the top of the mount. Now, I know. No, I won't go there. I won't go there. But sometimes when we read that Moses went up to the mountain, we always think he always went to the tippy top. No, he didn't. Here's the very first time it's written that he went to the top. Very top. Now, there's a reason behind it. What was the reason behind it? What says there? And Yahuwah said to Moses, go down again. Charge the people, at least they break through unto Yahuwah to gaze, and many of them perish. And let the priests, now I'll talk about priests later here. We'll get that story. Also, they come not near. Sanctify themselves, at least Yahuwah break through upon them. The priesthood wasn't even existed yet. Remember, this is not a story of what was happening at that point. This is always a story of what took place. We'll talk about the priesthood and how they became priesthood. They could not become priesthood. Aaron was not called a high priest until much time, many, 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 many months later. So the authors who put the stuff together, they were always writing in past tense. They're not writing in present tense here. They're telling you what that even those who were to become priests were not yet priests, for them not even come. Who was the priesthood going to be made up of? The Levites. The priesthood was going to be made up of Levites. There was a certain characteristic about the Levites. It's very fascinating. We'll get there when that time comes. But let's continue on here. And verse 24. And Yahweh said unto him, to Moses, away, get thee down, and then, or thou shalt come back up, thou and Aaron with thee. Now, do you remember seeing Aaron ever go to the top of the mountain? He wasn't there, was he? Not according to movies. But there they were. So these two guys were protected. So Moses went down unto the people and spoke to them. Oh, that's the end of the chapter. Oh, we'll have to wait the next week. So what do you think so far? Did God scare these people to death? They were so terrified. And we'll get that into the next chapter. They didn't even want God around. They are scared. Yes.
But if they were so scared, why would they want to break through the thorny areas or whatever that thorn and come up and gaze upon Moses, upon the Lord?
We will see this in the future chapters, because there was a point he said, now I want some of the elders to come up here. It was a time and wind for them to come up. It will, you'll see this later on as we keep on going into, I don't remember if it was the 21st chapter or 22nd chapter, somewhere in there, where he allowed others to come up. And it's very important. But at this particular point in time, there got to be people in there wanting to know what God looks like. Yeah. Not just Moses. You know, curious. I'm going to go there. I'm terrified. I'm scared. I'm frightened to death. But I'm going to go.
No, no. And they said, don't go down. That's why it's a warning there. Somebody, I don't know who, it doesn't tell you who. It's not to tell them to go down there, tell them don't do it. Only Aaron's going to come up. Yes.
This kind of helps me in my great wisdom. Sometimes I wonder why I can't form an apologetic to talk people into believing in God. And just I'm imagining from these people's points of view what they've been through, and they still reject him, so many.
Right, but remember, they did
people
not
still make a choice.
They did not recognize, until we read this chapter, when he said, I'm going to come down to you now in a thick cloud, and they're going to be hearing me talk to you, and when they hear me talk to you, they're going to believe you from this point on, Moses, because what was going to come was great fire, great thunder, earthquakes, terrorizing, and blowing that trumpet that would just frighten people to death.
Later, many of these same people rejected, and that's kind of my point. It's
we'll get there later. We'll get there later when that later time comes. I'm only in this journey now to the tent. I want to be here during the tent and not go any farther. All right? Because we're not finished there yet. Next week, we'll be at the end. All right. You remember this picture?
Yeah.
Oh, you had a question?
I have a question. The word for priest can be interpreted principal officer or chief ruler.
Correct.
And since they had already been appointed, was he talking about those?
I would say
elders?
He's talking about those. That's correct.
And not
so we have
a
to be
Levitical
careful how
priesthood.
We look at the scripture. But I want to go here for a minute. You remember this picture? All right. It was a picture of what? Sinai Peninsula. You remember there was a guy named, Jacob, yeah. He had a brother. His name was, yeah. He had another name too, though. Eden? Yeah. What does that mean? Red! Oh, where did Edom live? What do we call that today? Gulf of Aqaba. That was Edom's territory. The red man's territory. This was called the Red Sea. This was not called the Red Sea because Edom didn't live there. Edom lived over here. You understand what I'm saying? Very clear. Not that hard to figure out. I talked to you about the next picture. This little spot over here. Remember I told you there was rivers, valleys? They're all dried up now. But there's a river down here and at one time. And then it had a big sandy area. Remember that's one of the names of the places where they had their camp? And the reason why they camped there? Because it's where the mouth of two rivers went into the sea. Okay? I'll give you a blow up. That's what that place looks like today. Big area, isn't it? As you can see, obviously, they had to go northward because got water out here, right? They had to go to a mountain, face a mountain. And here's this area, this, I don't know if that's the mountain or some mountain in here, where the Israelites had to stay behind. And while the wind came through and dried the whole place up. Remember, they had to go north. The king of the north. So they had to face this direction. How far up? I don't know. I couldn't get a better shot of this. But just kind of let you know what's going on. Now, by the time this is over with, I ordered a CD, a DVD, a DVD, anyway, those picture things. And some of you are very familiar with it. Do you know that when on the other side, there's a map. This is the section right here. Would you actually blow up of? Down here, there was a monument. It was built by King Solomon. It was that point of the crossing. When the Saudi Arabia realized what it was, they tore it down. And they put a placard there. They know it was built by King Solomon because it's all in Hebrew. It's all in Hebrew. Now, we talked about the journey of the crossing. We went through all this, all right? Now, the journey of the ten. We went through this thing about on the 24th day of the first month. Now, you see up the arrow, it says, the fourth that I got, the first right behind it. Okay, fourth encampment from a given point. And now we're in the first encampment after they crossed that sea. There's the fourth one. There's the fifth one. There's the sixth one. There's the seventh one, which is we'll talk about next week. All right? Counting of the 7 weeks. This will be the outline for you. Now you see the numbers? 1, 2, 3, 4. Now I recount. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. That's where Shavuot comes into account. Did you also notice the 10th encampment in the time of a certain given location? And that's when the Ten Commandments were given. Now the count of the 50. You'll get this outline. Day number 1, 17th day of the first month. The 21st was a holy day. It wasn't. It's the fifth day of the count. At Meriboth, 8th day of the count. Elam, 15th day. Red Sea, 22nd day. Sheen, 29th. Sheen again, 29, 38. And then Raphaim, when they had the war and the water, 45 days. Sinai, the fourth day of the third month, 49 days. The commandments, 50. We'll get the outline next week. Now, what I'm going to tell you is, it's not a matter of whether I got it right or wrong. The matter is there a pattern here? Only in Exodus does it tell you each and every event that was important in Exodus. In Numbers, it just gives you encampment, 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 encampment. I'm not saying that's the only place they ever encamped during their travel for 50 days. They probably stopped more than that. In fact, it looks like, and you read the Numbers, they look like they didn't stop a whole lot more than 50 times. Not 50 times, I mean more than these. I'm only talking about the events that take place in the book of Exodus. Why in the book of Exodus? Why in the book of Exodus? What is Exodus different about? What's Exodus trying to tell us to do? What's it showing us? Every one of these stops we've gone along, when I said to you before, sometimes we focus in on what the people did or did not do. And what I want to show you in each one of those encampments is what God was doing. The rest of the encampments that you see in Numbers doesn't show God or explain God in that encampment. These are the ones that He has listed in the book of Exodus for us to see His actions, not ours, or not theirs. The reason why it has to be done this way, helping to understand, even this English word called Exodus, helps us to understand that God is responsible for every place that He sent them. He is the one that was in charge. And we have all these interesting seven locations after they crossed the Red Sea, and water, no water, bad water, 12 wells, 70, and then a place where manna, God wants to, and then He tested them out. It was God doing all the testing. He says, I did this to try you, to test you, to find out whether or not you will do something. Will you keep my word? Right? Now, next week, we're going to go through the Ten Commandments. And I said last week, what is the difference between a commandment and a law or a statute? What's the difference between the two? If you are in the military, you have what's called a commanding officer. He gives you a commandment. And what are you supposed to do?
Do it.
Now, when there is a law, and you break a law, are you breaking a commandment or are you breaking a law? Who do you face when you break a law?
The judge.
All right. Now, the word law in Hebrew comes from a certain word which has been translated into a very familiar word called Torah. What is the root word of Torah? You who have been with me, what is the root word of Torah? Instructions. That's right, instructions. I'm going to give you some instructions. I'll give you some teachings. Then there comes up this other word that's in Hebrew. Those who've been around, it's called ordinances. Oh, are ordinances commandments or ordinance Torah, ordinance teachings? What is an ordinance in Hebrew? It's a statute. It is a law. And then it comes in as the house of Israel had to establish what was called, then God established what they were, ordinances. Ordinances, laws, to run your country, to run your society, run whatever it is that you have to run and do. This is your job. And if you don't do those ordinances, something is going to happen. It breaks down. Law and order breaks down, right? There is nothing there. So in Hebrew, we get to this other phrase. We're not going to do it today. But I want you to keep those three things in mind. There's one called the Torah, which comes from instructions and teachings. The other one's called commandments. And the third one's called ordinances. And we will try next week. I'll briefly put them together as fast as I can. Just a quick definition of what they are.
What about judgments?
Oh, judgments is a different situation. That's not a law. That's not an ordinance. Judgment is the result of either doing something or not doing something. Okay? There's a judgment against me as a teacher. All right? And I have to face him because he's telling me what he wants me to teach, and if I don't do it, I'm in trouble. Now, will I stumble and fall in my face when I teach something? Oh, yeah. And that's expected. But I got to get back up again. I got to correct the teaching. I got to correct my understanding. And I've got to tell you, all you people, you know, I said this, but it's not true. It's just, this is the truth, because I learned now more, something else. God pretty well let me know I got it wrong. Once again, my object of traveling through the ten, the journey to the ten, is for us to see what God is doing, what God did do, and how that journey, that what He did to them, involves your life. It's not a distant story. It's not a story that really belongs to Jews. It's a story that belongs to you. If you have a hard time, why would God test me out that way? Because that's what He does. You may not like it. You may not like getting sick. Guess what? They got sick. Remember the bitter waters? They got sick. And what was the object of that? What was the object of all that? So what?
Trusting in the Lord.
Mira, bitterness made him sick. And then He told Moses to do something. What did He tell Moses to do? To do what? And then He said, God said what? That you will know that I am your healer. The whole story behind Meribah is not the mere fact that these people complained. Yes, they were tested. What were they tested? The first thing they were tested with was their health. Oh, I'm going to make you sick. Oh. And by the way, I'm going to heal you. Moses, throw it in there. Oh. And the water was fine to drink. And he says, guess what? I am your healer. The first lesson they had to learn was that, right? The first thing they had to learn. So when you get my notes, I want you to go through them. What did God do here? What did He say? What was His point? Elam, what did God do? What did He say? What's His point? At the Red Sea. What did He do? What did He say? What's His point? First place of sin. What did He do? What did He do? What's His point? Oh, again. What to do? What did He do? What was the point? What was He trying to do? At crashing the water, okay? Breaking the stone, the war. What was He trying to do? What was He trying to teach? What was God trying to do? What was God doing? Sinai, what was He doing? What was God doing? What was God's point there? Before that, on the 33 days. And the commandments. Oh, we say, oh, God had something to do with that one. He could not bring them to this point until He tested them out first. Do you think God's going to do the same thing to you? You hope He does. You have one thing going for you, and we'll talk about that next week. You have one thing going for you that's in your favor. It was not in theirs. Any more statements? Any more thoughts?
I noticed, Richard, that a couple of these instances, because I've not been here, as you know, the last few weeks, a couple of these instances, like the bitter waters and the water from the rock, they have messianic significance, pointing
to... Right, I'm not saying they don't. What I'm trying to tell, what I want us to go through is, if we were there, we don't know what's going on.
Right.
We are blindsided by
right.
all what's going on. I want us to be there as if we were there. Because we didn't see, they did not see any messianic thing there at all.
I agree.
All they saw was Moses.
But from this point in our history, just my question was, it wasn't to do with that. It was just from this point in history, having Messiah and seeing,
right,
for
right,
example,
right.
Paul says, Moses hit the rock, and that rock was Christ,
right.
Right? That rock, so obviously that hitting of the rock was also a picture of the water that came out of the Messiah's body, right, which is shed.
Also the killing of the Messiah.
Similarly, similarly for Mara, the bitter waters, the netzer that is a branch, which is another name.
Right.
We can see this. We have this privilege from this side of
right.
the
nice, but
resurrection.
I grant you. I agree with you there, but you're going ahead of me right now.
Okay. But no, just my question was, all I wanted to know is, because to be honest with you, because I've been gone, I haven't studied this recently. Possibly, at every single stop that you've been covering in the last few weeks...
In the book of Exodus.
From this side of the resurrection, there is possibly a Christological or messianic significance
to
each of these instances would point forward to
and
the Messiah.
And it's going to reoccur again.
Right. The more you're teaching this, the more I'm realizing that this is something that very possibly, because... The scripture also says, come ye out of her, my people, which is the same coming out, coming up that happened to the people back during the Exodus.
And they came out in order, in preciseness.
Yes.
And when we are going to come out, we're going to come out in order, in precise, with a high hand.
Yes.
We will be running with the tail between our legs and scared to death someone will kill us.
Right. I'm seeing that very strongly, but I'm just so it behooves us from this side of the resurrection to look at these instances, because this is what the Father himself is calling us to strive. We who have the benefit of the Messiah so that we meet the test.
We also have the benefit of seeing what happened back then.
Exactly.
We have this wonderful thing called God's insight, not ours.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Apostle Paul made that statement. He says, therefore, our admonition and our correction.
Yes.
Not for them, but for us.
Exactly.
And this is the reason why I'm spending so much time in the journey to the tent.
Right. Yeah.
And so we need to see what God is doing.
Right.
Pay attention, because now we can move that into the New Testament. We can start moving into the parables that the Messiah said. We start moving it into there. We say, oh, I got the picture. I got the picture.
All
the
of
picture.
Paul's teaching basically is centered around the Exodus event.
Yes. It always starts there. And
a good portion. That's his foundation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, this is a fantastic story, right? And it's been a long journey, hasn't it? And I wanted to go through this journey with you as if you had no idea where you're going. They didn't know. Moses, all he was told was, when he was terrified, frightened at the burning bush, scared, didn't want to do the job and want to get out of it. Then God said to Moses, this will be a witness to you, Moses. You will bring them back to this mountain. Moses didn't know what was going on. He did not have insight, wisdom far greater than anybody else. He was just a man who was happy to be alive at 80 and not have to worry about Egypt anymore, because that guy who got killed, he was dead. Oh, great. Ah, no worry. They're not after my life. They can't knock me down now. Even if they do, no one's there. All those want to kill me in Egypt. They're the past. They're dead. And then God upset his world. How many people in the Bible do you know saw a bush burn? But no smoke. Fire. No smoke. The bush was not even being consumed. It's just there. I don't think anybody in this room has ever done that. In fact, I don't think anybody in the history of mankind has ever seen that except for one man. I got a funny feeling the bush got burnt up, though. When he came out on top of the mountain, and just everything black. Even the rocks turned black. Because that's not the point. You know what? If that bush was still there, it'd be an idol. and worship it. Any more thoughts? Because see, next week, the reason why we're going, I got three things to talk about next week. I'll try to do it as quick as I can. But you'll understand a little bit what's going back then. You'll understand the Ten Commandments, the hope a little better. You'll also understand another thing about what it is Shavuot's all about. And the final thing of what Shavuot is all about.